You know, when you pick up your smartphone today or just open your laptop, there is this incredible, almost flawless illusion of
Oh,
weightlessness.
absolutely. It's like it's all just magic.
Right. You type a quick prompt into a box, and a generative AI instantly writes a complex report for you, or maybe it generates a high-definition image, and it all feels like this digital experience lives in some, invisible, frictionless cloud floating somewhere above us.
Well, it's a very deliberately designed illusion. We have basically engineered our entire digital ecosystem to hide the actual machinery from you. You don't get to see the physical gears turning or the server racks heating up or, the thousands of people maintaining the code. You just see the polished, instantaneous result on a sleek glass screen.
But today, we are shattering that illusion. We are pulling back the curtain. We've pulled a stack of six major tech headlines from August 2026.
Straight from our intel over at Tekin Morning.
Exactly. And we are going to cut through the daily noise to find the hidden threads connecting all of them. The overarching theme for our deep dive today is the hidden costs of scale.
Because when you look at the raw source material we're examining, it really reveals the massive physical, security, and human tolls required to keep this invisible digital world expanding.
We are essentially looking at the incredibly heavy anchor tied to that weightless cloud. As we go through these sources with you, we're going to unpack the real-world implications of everything from the sheer physics of AI infrastructure to structural cybersecurity wars, all the way to the brutal economics of the video game industry.
It's a lot to cover, but it all connects.
Okay, let's unpack this by starting with the software that is fundamentally changing how we work, and then we'll pivot directly to the harsh physical reality required to run it. Let's look at OpenAI.
Right, their latest move.
They just officially announced the acquisition of a startup called NextSlide. Now, this is a fascinating move because NextSlide was founded by Ahmed Beshri.
He's the same developer who created Canvas, right?
And what NextSlide does is it converts a simple text prompt or even just a messy folder of your scattered notes and documents into a fully editable presentation.
And to be clear on the capability here, we aren't just talking about generating a quick outline or, a few generic bullet points on a plain white background.
No, it's way beyond that.
The mechanism here is generating a complete 20-slide professional presentation. It automatically formats charts, pulls in relevant images, and organizes the text flow, all from a single unstructured text prompt. It is a massive leap in generative productivity.
Which is just wild to think about if you've ever spent like 3 hours fighting with presentation formatting.
Oh, we all have.
But what I really love about this source is the mechanics of OpenAI's acquisition strategy here. The financials weren't disclosed, but the entire NextSlide team hasn't just been acquired. They've been folded directly into the core ChatGPT development team.
Yeah, that's a crucial detail.
It's like instead of deciding to start a rock band and going out to hire a drummer and a bassist and a guitarist from scratch and hoping they get along, OpenAI is just going out and buying an entire perfectly rehearsed band and dropping them directly onto their main stage.
And that approach, which is often called an acqui-hire in the industry, it bypasses the massive friction of team building. OpenAI isn't just buying NextSlide's code base, they are buying the embedded team synergy. When a team has already spent years figuring out how to collaborate, how to structure their code, and how to troubleshoot together, you don't want to disrupt that.
You want to harness it.
Exactly. Beshri himself noted that their mission was always to make visual communication more accessible. And by plugging their rehearsed team into ChatGPT, they instantly have the largest platform in the world to deploy their tools.
So we have this sleek, magical software getting even more capable, expanding what the cloud can do for you in seconds. But now let's look at the ground.
Because the cloud has to live somewhere.
To power this magical AI revolution, Amazon is building a new data center in Pecos County, Texas. And this isn't just a warehouse with some servers. It is a 7.65 gigawatt natural gas power plant.
That number is just staggering.
It's being developed by Pacifico Energy, and it utilizes 35 massive natural gas turbines.
And this specific facility is exactly where the illusion of weightless technology completely breaks down. I mean, a 7.65 gigawatt power draw is difficult to even conceptualize.
Put that into perspective for us.
Well, for context, one single gigawatt is roughly enough to power 750,000 homes. So Amazon is building a localized power plant that could power millions of homes purely to feed artificial intelligence service.
And the environmental cost of that is staggering. Based on the permits, this plant is allowed to emit 33 million tons of carbon dioxide annually.
33 million tons.
Yeah. To put that 33 million tons in perspective for you, the absolute largest, dirtiest coal power plant currently operating in the United States emits around 20 to 25 million tons of CO2 a year. Amazon is building a natural gas facility for AI that blows the country's biggest coal plant out of the water in terms of emissions. Now, I have to push back here because this feels incredibly hypocritical.
How so?
Well, Amazon was a founding member of the Climate Pledge, right? They made a massive public commitment to being net zero carbon by 2040. Why would a company so publicly committed to climate goals build what is permitted to be the country's largest single pollution source? Texas has huge solar and wind farms. Why not just use green energy?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we really have to understand the underlying physics of how artificial intelligence actually computes.
Okay.
It operates in two main phases: training and inference. Training a massive model like GPT-4 requires running thousands of specialized chips at absolute maximum capacity for months just to process the data.
Just nonstop processing.
Right. Then you have inference, which is when hundreds of thousands of users are actively asking the AI questions using AWS services like Q or Code Whisper. Both of those phases require exponential localized amounts of power that generate massive, massive heat.
So they need way more power than standard cloud hosting. But that still doesn't explain why they can't use a massive wind farm to provide that power, right?
It comes down to the concept of baseload reliability. Renewable energy, by its very nature right now, is intermittent.
Ah, the wind stops blowing.
Exactly. The wind speed drops, or a storm blocks the solar grid. AI data centers simply cannot handle a drop in power. They require guaranteed 247 ultra-reliable baseload power.
So they can't afford a flicker.
No, if a massive AI training run loses power for even a fraction of a second, the operational disruption, I'm talking data corruption, hardware faults, having to restart the compute cycles, it's catastrophic and incredibly expensive.
So you're saying you just can't rely on the weather when a millisecond power dip ruins millions of dollars of compute time?
Exactly. Right now, at this unprecedented 7.65 gigawatt scale, only natural gas or nuclear energy can provide that constant, throttleable baseline power.
Yeah.
Amazon is likely investing heavily in renewables elsewhere to try and buy carbon offsets, but for the physical reality of this specific facility, natural gas is the only immediate practical option they have to meet the overwhelming demand for AI.
It's a bitter irony. Their quartet emissions are actually skyrocketing because of the AI boom, despite all their net zero pledges.
Yeah, the math just doesn't favor the climate right now.
So the key takeaway for you listening is that the AI revolution is not some ethereal thing happening in the cloud. It is inextricably tethered to a massive carbon-heavy footprint right here on the ground.
Which naturally leads us to the next structural challenge. We are building these massive physical hubs to centralize and process the world's data. But centralizing that much processing power makes those hubs incredibly high-value targets for threat actors.
Absolutely.
If we look at our cybersecurity sources today, the data flowing through these systems is alarmingly fragile.
Yeah, let's pivot to the Metabase zero-day breach, because this shows just how quickly things can collapse. If you use a framework laptop, they make those incredibly cool modular computers.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
Or if you use Tally accounting software, you need to pay close attention to this. On August 3, 2026, a critical security breach hit Metabase, which is a very popular business intelligence tool used by both of those companies to analyze their internal data.
And the severity of this cannot be overstated. This vulnerability scored a perfect 10.0 out of 10 on the Common Vulnerability Scoring System, or the CVSS scale.
Okay, stop for a second because we need to break this down. The report says it was a SQL injection attack targeting the API session reset password endpoint.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. For those of us who aren't penetration testers, explain what an API endpoint is and how a SQL injection actually gets through it.
Let's use an analogy. Imagine a company's database is a massive, highly secured warehouse containing all their sensitive customer files. You, as a user, aren't allowed inside the warehouse.
Makes sense.
Instead, there is a clerk at a loading dock window. That loading dock clerk is the API endpoint. When you click reset password on a website, you are handing a request to that clerk.
Okay, so the API is basically the messenger between the user and the database.
Right. Now, in a normal scenario, you hand the clerk your username, they go into the warehouse, check the files, and send you a password reset link. But a SQL injection is a manipulation of that process.
How so?
Instead of handing the clerk your username, a hacker types a string of malicious database commands into the username box. Because of a flaw in the code, specifically in Metabase versions 1.58 and above, the API clerk didn't realize it was a malicious command.
Oh, no.
The clerk took that code, walked into the warehouse, and unknowingly executed a command that gave the hacker full administrator master keys.
So they didn't have to guess a password or bypass a firewall. They just tricked the ATI into handing them the keys to the kingdom.
Yes. What made it a 10.0 severity is that the attackers gained full, unrestricted administrator access without needing to authenticate or prove who they were at all.
That is terrifying. Now, Framework did issue a statement confirming that payment information like your credit card numbers was completely isolated and not exposed.
Well, that's a small relief.
Yeah. But full names, home addresses, work addresses, emails, phone numbers, login IP addresses, and specific device info were all leaked. And the tech and security team put out a massive warning about this, because even without your credit card, this is a gold mine for hackers.
Oh, absolutely.
If they know your exact physical home address and the exact model of your laptop, they can craft an email asking you to click here to update your Framework laptop shipping details, and it will look flawlessly real. It's a phishing paradise.
And dealing with a breach of that magnitude highlights a massive systemic issue in the tech industry right now. Cybersecurity isn't just about patching the code after the warehouse gets robbed.
Right.
It's about how global IT teams track and communicate about the robbers themselves before they strike again, which transitions perfectly into a major operational shift Google is pushing right now.
Right. So while hackers are exploiting tools like Metabase, the defense side of the industry is trying to fight back by fixing how they communicate. The Google Threat Intelligence Group announced they are completely dropping the old Mandiant naming system for hacking groups.
If you ever read a data breach report, you know the old system. It was entirely acronyms and numbers. APT1, APT41.
Yeah, APT stands for Advanced Persistent Threat, followed by a sequential number.
It's very dry, very robotic.
The new system Google is rolling out uses a much simpler two-word structure. It's a unique, randomly generated first name, plus a geographical country indicator.
Okay.
So state-sponsored Chinese hacking groups get the indicator Castle. Iranian groups are labeled Ion. North Korea gets Neptune. Russia is Relic. And financially motivated non-state criminal groups get Comet.
Right.
But let me play devil's advocate here. Does changing a hacker's name from APT41 to something like Sandcastle actually do anything to protect my data? Or is this just corporate PR to make their threat report sound like a Tom Clancy spy novel?
It definitely sounds like a marketing pitch.
Yeah, to use an analogy, if you rename a burglar, they're still breaking into my house.
It definitely sounds like a superficial marketing rebrand on the surface.
Right.
But it is actually a desperate operational necessity. What's fascinating here is the sheer unmanageable chaos of the old naming conventions.
What do you mean?
Under the previous systems, because different cybersecurity firms act independently, they would often discover the exact same hacking group and give them entirely different names.
Oh, I see.
The Google Threat Intelligence Group pointed out in their release that one specific Russian threat actor was simultaneously being tracked under the names Blue Echidna, Electrum, Frozen Barents, Iron Viking, Telebox, Voodoo Bear, and G00034.
Wait, Voodoo Bear and G00034 were the exact same people operating from the exact same basement.
The exact same group. Now imagine you are a corporate IT director at a hospital or a bank. Your systems are under attack and you pull threat intelligence reports from three different security vendors. Vendor A says you need to defend against Voodoo Bear. Vendor B says Iron Viking is probing your network. Vendor C warns you about G00034. You might waste crucial hours dividing your team, thinking you are fighting a sophisticated multi-front war against three separate organizations.
When in reality, it's just one group using one set of tactics.
Exactly.
Ah, I see. It's like air traffic control.
Mm-hmm.
If every airport called the exact same airplane by a completely different flight number, you'd have mid-air collisions constantly. Google is essentially trying to create a universal flight tracker for threat actors.
Precisely. You cannot track, report, and mount a global defense against cyber threats if the defenders are all speaking different languages.
Makes total sense.
By standardizing this, randomizing the first word to avoid bias, and attaching the country indicator, Google is simplifying the intelligence. When a CVSS 10.0 disaster hits, clear communication is just as important as the firewall itself.
So we've seen how these massive companies manage their physical power needs and how they are trying to manage the security of our data. But the sources reveal another glaring, almost uncomfortable contrast in how the tech and finance worlds manage their resources.
Yeah, this is where it gets a bit grim.
Specifically, we're looking at where capital feels safe versus where human talent is treated as completely disposable.
It is a stark dichotomy between how institutions view financial assets versus human assets.
Let's follow the money first. Yeah. The crypto market is seeing a massive institutional resurgence. Over just a five-day period in August 2026, Bitcoin and Ethereum exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, saw a staggering $1.098 billion in inflows.
That is the strongest performance we've seen since April.
And the breakdown of where that capital is flowing is very telling about investor appetite. Bitcoin ETFs grabbed the lion's share, pulling in $853.5 million, which is nearly 78% of the total cash flow.
Huge numbers.
And Ethereum ETFs took in roughly $245 million. And BlackRock, as a traditional finance giant, is just dominating this space.
Oh, without a doubt.
Their IVIT Bitcoin fund alone captured 80% of that total cash flow. That is $479 million pouring into one single fund in just five trading days. At the time of this report, Bitcoin was hovering around $65,092 and Ethereum at $1,872.
Incredible volume.
But we need to pause and ask the why here. Why are billions of dollars flowing into ETFs? Why aren't these massive pension funds and institutional investors just buying the crypto directly on an exchange?
It really comes down to regulatory structure and risk mitigation. For an institutional investor, buying direct cryptocurrency introduces massive compliance headaches.
Right, because if you buy directly, you have to deal with wallet custody. For those who aren't in the crypto space, owning crypto directly means you hold a private key, which is basically a complex cryptographic password, often represented as a list of words called a seed phrase.
Which you do not want to lose.
Exactly. If you lose that seed phrase or a hacker steals it, your money is gone forever. There is no customer service hotline to call to reverse the transaction. Using an ETF to invest in crypto is kind of like having a licensed, highly regulated professional chauffeur drive you through a blizzard instead of trying to drive a manual car on black ice yourself.
Building on that chauffeur analogy, the ETF structure means the Securities and Exchange Commission is basically acting as the safety inspector for that car.
Right.
When you buy a share of BlackRock's ETF, BlackRock is the one jumping through all the technical hoops to securely purchase and store the actual Bitcoin in enterprise-grade cold storage vaults.
You just sit back and watch the ticker.
Exactly. The investor just gets a standard stock ticker in their traditional brokerage account. It bridges the gap between a highly volatile, technically complex asset and the familiar, legally compliant wrapper of traditional finance.
So you don't have to worry about custody, you don't memorize seed phrases, and there's no fear of getting hacked on a shady exchange. Capital always flows toward the path of least resistance and highest perceived structural safety.
Always.
But here is the sharp, painful contrast in our sources today. While billions of dollars are flowing into the institutional safety of regulated digital assets, tech giants are simultaneously treating highly specialized, veteran human talent, real, tangible people, as disposable line items on a corporate spreadsheet.
The Microsoft Xbox layoffs. The reports on this are incredibly grim.
They really are. Microsoft announced a sweeping restructuring program, laying off 3,200 staff across the Xbox division and its various game development studios.
And that's not even all at once.
Right. 1,600 people were let go immediately, with another 1,600 scheduled to be laid off over the next 12 months.
It is the largest single layoff wave in the history of the Xbox brand. But the impact on one specific studio ad software is what really highlights the loss of human capital.
iAd Software is legendary. They are the studio that practically invented the modern first-person shooter. They built Doom, Quake, Wolfenstein. Our sources show they lost 136 developers in July alone.
That is roughly half of the entire studio's workforce.
Yeah, 96 people were cut from their Richardson, Texas office, along with 40 remote workers. And these aren't just entry-level positions. These were veteran developers who built modern masterpieces like Doom 2016.
Absolutely brutal.
The lead services programmer, Chris Hayes, was among those laid off, and he tweeted something that really cuts to the core of this corporate disconnect. He said, "They fundamentally don't understand art. They don't understand games."
It's a F-A statement.
He noted that entire specialized departments were gutted and argued that making a AAA blockbuster game with half a studio is logistically impossible. Now, creative director Marty Stratton did try to push back on claims of complete studio destruction, reassuring fans that their upcoming game, Doom, The Dark Ages, is still in active development. But as a consumer, you really have to ask, Is Microsoft just padding its short-term profit margins for the next quarterly earnings call at the direct expense of its long-term intellectual property?
This raises an important question about a fundamental misunderstanding of how actual value is generated in the tech and entertainment industries.
Yeah.
Look at the contrast we just discussed.
Yeah.
Institutional investors are pouring billions into crypto ETFs because they deeply value the complex structural safety of that financial asset. But tech giants are treating their most complex, hardest-to-build structural asset human development teams as completely expendable.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if we circle all the way back to the beginning of this deep dive, we talked about OpenAI acquiring NextSlide.
The acqui-hire.
Right. OpenAI didn't just buy the NextSlide code. They explicitly bought the entire team because they recognized the immense, unquantifiable value of embedded knowledge and team synergy.
Exactly. And the video game industry, especially at the AAA level, relies on custom, highly complex proprietary game engines like id Software's id Tech Engine.
You can't just learn that overnight.
No, you cannot simply fire a 10-year veteran engine programmer and replace them with a new graduate 6 months later without losing massive amounts of operational momentum. Years of embedded knowledge, understanding the quirks of the code, knowing how to optimize art assets to run at 60 frames per second.
It just disappears.
That institutional memory vanishes the moment those 136 people walk out the door. Money can buy a startup, and billions can flow into an ETF. But $1 billion in the bank cannot instantly rebuild the artistic and technical synergy of a veteran game studio.
No.
Short-term profit padding often results in long-term creative bankruptcy because you've destroyed the very engine that builds the products people love.
It's a stark reality check on what we actually value in the digital age. So, looking at this whole stack of intel from Tech and Analysis, if we bring it all together for you, there are three massive takeaways today. First, rapid technological growth, especially the magic of AI, has incredibly heavy physical and environmental costs.
Amazon's 33-million-ton natural gas plant proves that the invisible cloud is very much tethered to the ground, requiring massive baseload energy.
Right. And second, securing that infrastructure requires extreme vigilance and absolute operational simplicity. The Metabase Zero Day showed us how easily APIs can be manipulated to bypass security entirely.
Which is exactly why standardizing threat intelligence, like Google's new naming system, is so critical to help defenders communicate globally.
And third, true, enduring value lies in human talent and embedded knowledge, not just short-term balance sheets. The sharp contrast between institutional money flooding into the safety of crypto ETFs, while Xbox simultaneously guts the veteran talent at Ed Software, shows a dangerous disconnect in how corporate giants view their human workforce.
It really is all connected.
So the next time you use a fast AI tool to generate a presentation, or you stream a AAA video game, or you check your crypto ETF portfolio, remember the massive physical footprint, the complex invisible security wars, and the very real human labor holding that invisible digital world together.
The illusion of weightless technology that we experience on our screens only exists because of the incredibly heavy lifting happening behind the scenes.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to mull over. We started today by talking about OpenAI actively acquiring a human team to build better, faster AI tools. And we ended by talking about Xbox laying off half of its human developers to save a buck.
Yeah.
As these AI models require increasingly larger polluting data centers just to train on human-made art and human-written code in code, what happens when an AI is finally tasked with coding the next AAA video game entirely on its own? Will there be any human artists left in the studio to even push back?
A chilling thought, considering the sheer velocity of the industry right now.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the seamless screens in front of you. Look for the heavy machinery operating in the background, and we'll see you next time.